This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we're here every week to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and topical for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. So I don't know what could be more topical here in Western New York than talking about sports in general. You think I'm just going to talk about the Bills, but I'm not. Because a friend of mine has written the most fascinating book about other sports as well, about sports in general here in Western New York. He is author Greg Trantner, and probably we might have talked to Greg once before. I'm not sure. Did we, Greg, when you did the,
yes, we did.
The other book? I thought so. So Greg is a sports aficionado. Is that a good way to put it? And he is actually a historian. And he has written several books about different aspects of sports. And now, his newest book, which we're going to be talking about, just by the when I tell you the title, you are going to be so intrigued that you're never going to turn the dial until we have this conversation. The title is The Buffalo Sports Curse, 120 Years of Pain, Disappointment, Heartbreak, and Eternal Optimism. And, oh my gosh, Greg, when I saw this title, I thought, please don't let this apply to the Bills this year. Hi, it doesn't, yes. Right? It
no,
doesn't,
I'm,
right?
I'm actually hoping not. And one good omen has already occurred. So I got my first book from RIT Press on the Saturday before the Bills played the Chiefs.
Okay.
And I was looking through the book on Sunday, and I sat it next to me during the game, and of course the Bills came back and won. So I think that's a good omen.
We're looking for any kind of omen. Let me just start out by asking you to tell our listeners about how you got interested, or your background in, as I said, you've written other books about sports too, and you've studied so much your whole life. I want you to tell us about how your interest in sports began and developed into this.
Sure. So I started out, my dad brought me to my first Bills game when I was 8 years old at the old Rock Pile. And I basically fell in love with the team that day, even though I had interest in them before then. But just going to the game was just an incredible experience. And that was back in 1965. And so that was the year the Bills won the AFL championship. And it was actually Cookie Gilchrist's first game back in Buffalo after he had been traded. But the Bills won that day, 31-10. That same year, I collected my first football cards. And they were the 1965 Topps football cards. And, of course, I collected all the Bills players. So that's really what started it. And my dad bought me a program and a bobblehead doll that day. And I started collecting. And then, Penny, as you know, I've collected the largest memorabilia collection of Bills in the world. And I donated it to the Buffalo History Museum. But before I did that, I decided to go back to school. And I went to Tufts University and got a master's degree in museum education so that I could learn about the museum field and to kind of know what to do with my collection. And after that, I decided to donate it. And what I really learned in that was it's really not about just the collectibles. It's about the stories behind the collectibles that make them intriguing and interesting. And so that really motivated me to start researching and writing about sports.
Now, I want to talk, before this, by the way, I know when you were on Target before, it was the book that you wrote about collectibles or about exhibits, or I can't think of the name, but
The book was called Relics.
Relics.
Yes, it was called Relics,
yes.
The History of the Buffalo Bills and Objects and Memorabilia.
Yes.
Yep.
So that was the precursor to this, I guess. But I want to say that you said I could learn all about it from the beginning of the book. It says, and I did, and I looked, and it says, do you believe in curses? You might, after reading Greg's treatise called The Buffalo Sports Curse, etc. And then he covers the ground that we know, which is wide right to no goal to forward lateral. Okay, I don't need, you lost me there. And what's
home run throwback?
What was that? Oh yeah, okay. And a lot that you forgot, or you, that you never knew. Well, I'm sure a lot of us never knew. So where do you come up with the idea that we have a curse here in Buffalo?
It actually started in 2003. I was reading a book called The First World Series, which was played in 1903, and it was the 100th anniversary of the First World Series. And I didn't realize until I read that book that the Boston Red Sox were actually born in Buffalo in 1900. So at the American League was forming, the American Baseball League was forming in 1900 and began play in 1901. And Buffalo was an original franchise in the American League. They had paid their franchise fee. They were all set to start playing in 1901. And at the last minute, the president of the American League, Ben Johnson, determined that he needed a team in Boston to compete with the National League's Boston Braves. At that point, he moved the Buffalo franchise to Boston. They became the Boston Americans. In 1903, they won the first World Series, managed by a Buffalonian named Jimmy Collins. And in 1907, they were renamed the Boston Red Sox.
That is later that same year. Yeah.
So that's part of the curse. The other thing that happened in 1901 was President McKinley was assassinated.
Oh my gosh, that we know. Yes.
And then the third thing that happened is James Franklin, who was a Buffalo alderman who owned the Buffalo baseball team, died of a heart attack at 53 years old. And many people said he died of a broken heart because he lost his baseball team to Boston and he wanted to have a major league team. So it's those three events together that begin the curse. And so then I started researching. And also in 2003, the other thing that happened is I read the book by Dan Shaughnessy, who's a Boston Globe reporter, who wrote the book The Curse of the Bambino, because the Red Sox had their own curse. And that's when the curse idea hit me. And that same year, the Red Sox lost Game 7 of the American League Championship Series to the Yankees. And therefore, I started saying, oh my God, this curse thing, like, it's really real. And I said, I need to start researching Buffalo because I think the curse applies. And so I started researching. And basically from 2003 to 2006, I did a tremendous amount of research and uncovered all kinds of things. And I actually started writing the book. I wrote 5 chapters in late 2006 and early 2007, and then I got a job promotion and I had to stop writing, and I didn't start again until the pandemic in 2020. But the research I did, I researched every major professional sports team in the 4 major sports in Buffalo, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, from 1900 to the present. And Buffalo has never won a universally recognized championship in any of the 4 major sports.
Level. Is that true? I'm sure it's true, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I bet our listeners are saying the same thing I am. How could that be?
The only championships that Buffalo has won in the 4 major sports at the major league level was the American Football League championships in 64 and 65, won by the Bills. However, at the time, the AFL was considered inferior to the NFL. And so the Bills would not have been deemed the universal recognized champion of pro football. It would have been the NFL champion in 64 and 65. And no other team, that, you know, the Sabres have gone to Stanley Cup finals and lost. And no other team in Buffalo has won a major championship in those 4 in those 4 sports.
And you know we're going to break that curse this year. I think everything is about it is interesting, but What I think is that amazing is that you can come up with information about not just football, which is, I guess it's maybe soccer, maybe hockey too, but I think football is on everybody's mind, but about the other sports as well, you know, baseball, because we all know the story about how we've tried to get a major league team here, baseball team, the richest, in my lifetime, and didn't succeed. Yeah. And I didn't, you know, to know that it goes all the way back to the, you know, the early 1900s is kind of, I don't know, scary. It says, you'll find out why Ben Johnson and George Halas were Buffalo antagonists long before Bill Belichick.
Yes.
I love that.
So, of course, Ben Johnson was the one who moved the team to Boston, so we lost the chance for an American League baseball team in 1901. In 1920, the Buffalo had an original franchise in the American Professional Football Association, which 2 years later was renamed the National Football League. So the National Football League began in 1920, and Buffalo had an original franchise. So in 1921, they were called the Buffalo All-Americans, and they had a terrific season. They finished what was defined as the regular season with an undefeated record. However, and they were at least crowned champions by the media. And then the Buffalo owner agreed to play two additional games after the season was technically over. And he thought they were exhibition games. Well, he played those exhibition games. They beat Akron one day, and the next day they played the Chicago Staleys, which the owner was George Halas. They lost to the Staleys 10-7. Right after that, George Halas claimed that the Staleys should be NFL champions because they had a better overall record than the All-Americans if you counted the two exhibition games. Halas lobbied, after the season was over, lobbied with the other owners in the NFL, and they agreed with Halas and crowned the Staleys NFL champions, and it's become known as the Staley Swindle, where basically George Halas stole the championship from Buffalo.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yes.
And then fast forward, go back, and then forward till 1946 to 49, Buffalo had a franchise in the All-American Football Conference known as the Buffalo Bills. They were first the Bisons in the first year, and then 47 to 49, they were known as the Buffalo Bills. And at the end of the 49 season, there was an agreement between the All-American Football Conference and the NFL to merge. And the NFL agreed to take three teams. And Buffalo was kind of on the edge. And a lot of people were lobbying that Buffalo should be included because they had the third best attendance in the league over the course of the four seasons. And they were a playoff team twice. Well, it came to a vote of the NFL owners, and they had to have a unanimous vote. George Halas voted against Buffalo becoming into the NFL in 1950.
What?
And so he was holding a grudge 29 years later because back in 1921, when the Staley Swindle occurred, the Buffalo owner, Frank McNeil, fought that decision the rest of his life because he thought it was deviously taken away from Buffalo.
Oh, my
gosh. So, yes, George Halas was not a friend of Buffalo.
Oh, my gosh. That's something that I'm sure not only took research, but, you know, it goes along with your curse theory. You also, when the curse theory, I think it's interesting that you come up with how the Sabres, how they've lost the cup and lose the cup and haven't been able to get it for so many years. I don't know what the curse is or what happened with them or what's happening with them. Hopefully it's going to be lost, but what happened to the Sabres or the hockey team as time went by?
Well, so the Sabres, of course, as everyone knows, the no goal, in 1999 when Brett Hull scored the game-winning goal, the Stanley Cup winning goal with his skate in the crease. But back in 1975, of course, the Buffalo had the French connection and were a very good team throughout the 70s, you know, from 75 on. They played in the Stanley Cup Finals against Philadelphia. And Philadelphia, of course, was very good at the time, too. But Bernie Parent was the goalie for the for Philadelphia, and he played just magnificently throughout that series. And Philadelphia ended up winning the series. But what the Sabres ran into was this, like, three great teams were in the NHL. First, it was Philadelphia, and they won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row. Then Montreal won it 4 years in a row. And then the Islanders won it 4 years in a row. So the French Connection never really got another opportunity, you know, to win the Stanley Cup. And then if you go even further forward into 2006, 2007, the Sabres had teams that went to the conference finals. They didn't make the Stanley Cup finals. But in the conference finals in 2006, they played the Carolina Hurricanes. And throughout the playoffs, the Sabres, it seemed like almost every game there was another injury. And they had four of their top defensemen were injured, and two other starting players were injured. And yet they took Carolina all the way to the seventh and deciding game in the conference finals. And the Sabres were leading 2-1 in the final period, despite missing six key players. Carolina tied the game 2-2, and then pretty late in the game, Brian Campbell, who was the Sabres defenseman, was trying to clear the puck out of his own zone, threw it into the stands inadvertently. That's a penalty. They called the penalty, and during the penalty, Carolina scores the game-winning goal, and Carolina goes on and wins the Stanley Cup. And that was probably the Sabres' best team, I don't know, ever, or certainly it was right up there with the two Stanley Cup teams that, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals teams.
And
then in 2007, yeah, they also lost in the conference finals.
Right, right. This is definitely, as you're reciting this history, Greg, Kevin and is nodding his head in the studio, and all the sports guys here are nodding their head, remembering all the incidents that you're talking about. It's horrible. I just want to interrupt for a moment and tell everyone that they're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang, and our guest today is Greg D. Tranter, and Greg is the author of the recently published book that we're talking about, The Buffalo Sports Curse, 120 Years of Pain, Disappointment, Heartbreak, and the last two words, Eternal Optimism. I love that. I'm so glad you put that in. You know, I was looking, you know, through the different subjects, and obviously you had to put OJ in here as Simpson,
yeah,
as part, you know, what do you think about that, about what happened to him and how that has to do with the Buffalo curse in many ways?
Yeah, the reason I put him in, you know, obviously a horrible tragedy, the way, you know, with the murders and everything that, you know, that happened in 1994. But if you go back to O.J. Simpson when he was in college and played for the University of Southern California, at the time in 1967, 68, he was not only the Heisman Trophy winner and considered the best college football player of the year. At the time, he was considered the greatest college football running back to ever play college football. And he was coming to Buffalo in 1969. And he did, and of course, you know, many of us Buffalo fans remember the great years that he had here and all the different records he broke, and of course he became a Hall of Fame running back in both football, but both professional football and college football. But more than that, he really represented Buffalo on the national stage, and he was in the 80s and 90s, he was the most popular ex-athlete around. He was what Michael Jordan is today, or what Tom Brady is. He was the most popular athlete across the country. And he was like Buffalo. He was Buffalo's guy. And when, you know, when the murders occurred, Buffalo lost that. They lost this national celebrity who talked positively about Buffalo and cared about Buffalo and came here. And so we lost something. And, you know, it went from, you know, I mean, he's had the greatest fall from grace of any professional athlete, I think, in history. And Buffalo lost something because of that.
Yes, and he was in national commercials.
I tell that story.
Yeah, and he was in national commercials. You know, we always think about him. I forget what the commercial was for, but running through the airport. Remember that? I always think about that commercial.
Right, so, Hertz Rent-A-Car.
Yeah. I couldn't think of it, but I remember. Is now every time I'm running or anybody is running through the airport to catch a plane, I think it comes to mind. They'll say, "Oh, this is like OJ trying to, you know, running through the airport." So, he
represented Buffalo.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's what, you know, everybody knew that, right?
Going back to history, and people did forget, and actually I didn't even know because I wasn't here at that time, when they almost had a basketball team. And that was a curse, too, not losing it and having it, you know, for such a short time, the Braves.
Yes. Yeah, we had the Buffalo Braves from 1970 to 78. And in two of the 3 years they made the playoffs, they lost to the eventual champion, the Boston Celtics, in both 1974 and 1976. And both of the series ended in controversy. In 1974, the game was tied, the game six, and if Buffalo had won, they would have forced a game seven. In game six, the game was tied, and the Celtics took kind of a wild shot at the end of the game, and the referees called a foul. And they also claimed there was no time left. The foul was something you probably don't call at the end of a tie game in a playoff game, yeah. But they did. He sank the two free throws, JoJo White of the Celtics. But in review, there was 2 seconds should have remained on the clock, but the officials refused. Of course, they didn't have replay in those days. They refused to put time back on the clock and ended the game, and Buffalo lost by 2 points, by those two free throws. A very controversial ending to what was a tremendous series, and then the Celtics went on to win the championship. And there was a similar ending in 1976, only it wasn't a free throw. Buffalo was driving to tie the game, and they called that the Buffalo player had stepped out of bounds before he drove in to score the field goal that would tie the game and send the game to overtime. So both of those were controversial losses. And then Paul Snyder, who was the owner of the team, decided to sell the team to John Y. Brown, who's famous for he basically expanded Kentucky Fried Chicken into a, you know, a national kind of chain. He bought the team and really didn't want the team in Buffalo. He wanted to move the team out of Buffalo. And so he sold off and traded the best players. You know, he traded away Bob McAdoo. He, you know, traded away Ernie DiGregorio. He sold Jim McMillan. So their best players, he kind of dismantled the team. With the idea that the lease called for, if they fell below 4,500 season tickets, they could break the lease. And of course, so he made the team bad and broke the lease, and they moved. And today they're the Los Angeles Clippers.
Oh my gosh.
And just a really sad, sad ending.
That is a curse, and that is a sad ending, because it would have been exciting to have a basketball, you know, team here in Buffalo. All these years,
yes,
you know,
yes,
and what it made
for sure.
Now that's not going to happen to you've got your crystal ball. It's not going to happen to the Bills, right? They're not going to leave Buffalo.
No, I'm anticipating that we're going to win this year. So.
No, I don't mean that.
I meant the leaving part.
Oh, I meant,
the leaving.
You know, when
no,
we
no.
talked about losing the Bills, you know, we lost the Braves. When we talk about that's not going to happen to us, right?
No. Yeah. Thankfully, the Pegulas came in and bought the team and. No, they're secure here. Just get the stadium lease signed and we should be good.
I'm laughing because on the different back cover quotes and so forth. One of my favorite is, best to read the book now before the coming NFL season. Well, that's when it first started. When the Bills will, and I'm emphasizing this, the Bills will reverse the curse. And then there's a few little dots there. Is everyone listening? Or relive it. How could you? I don't think so. Not relive it. Reverse it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll see. You know, there may be some controversy to me releasing the book now, because, of course, you know, the Bills are,
yes,
you know, one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
But I believe that we have to acknowledge that a curse exists.
Absolutely.
Before we can break it.
Absolutely.
So the book needed to be published.
Okay, I've said the title a thousand times. Where can we find the book, Greg? How can we get our listeners?
Yeah,
I'm sure they want to know everything else that we didn't talk about that's in it.
Yeah, so the book is available. RIT Press is the publisher. So it's available online through their website, which is rit.edu /Buffalo-sports-curse. So you can order it there. You can also, it's going to be in local bookstores. It'll be in the Barnes & Noble stores and many of the also local, other local bookstores. It's available at the Buffalo History Museum's store. It's available at the BFLO store. And it will be available on Amazon.
And it will be a great holiday gift for everybody. And by the time you get to read it, the curse will be broken. Thank you. Hey,
yes.
Thanks so much. Good luck. And thanks for talking to us. And probably the way you go, we'll talk to you about another book in the future, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there's more in the works.
Okay,
so, yes.
Greg. Okay, take care. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, Penny.
Please join us again next week for On Target. Same time, same place. Have a good week, and bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.